Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1.
Hey, Geeksters, I'm not Kylan.
But I am Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, to Geek Watch 1. And at some point, we're going to change that opening.
Yeah.
You've been saying that for 6 years.
I know. It's just a habit at this point.
We've changed it little bits along the way, but yeah. No big change.
So that all harkens back to when we thought this whole thing was just going to be Kylan and I.
That's true.
But we couldn't do that.
So long ago.
Yeah. I did go back 4 or 5 months ago and listen through the first episode, and actually it was not as bad as I was expecting to hear.
That's good.
Everybody, you expect the first time you've ever done this to be terrible, and you can almost not even able to hear it, listen to it. But we actually didn't do too bad for the first time.
Yeah.
Is that when Andy walked down and belched?
Which time? He's always doing that.
He's done that so many times.
Yeah.
True.
At this point, that's just part of Andy being on the show.
Right.
So Dawn, Kylan's not here, but how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, because, you know, Kylan's not here. kidding.
Only a little.
No, I'm good. I've been catching up on some things, and I've been keeping busy during the days and relaxing at night while he's away and even while he's home. I actually watched, because it was finally available to all subscribers, I watched Raya and the Last Dragon this week.
Yes, we watched that also.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Kylan hasn't watched it yet, but I told him he has to because of all the action. It's basically like an action movie, and I'd recommend it to people. I think it was good.
Yeah, it was cool because it was Southeast Asia, but it wasn't a Chinese story. A lot of times when we do Southeast Asia, they focus like on China. But this was based on did you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff on it also?
Right, yeah.
So it was based on a lot of everything from Malaysia to Taiwan to Indonesia, the entire Southeast Asia region south of China.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of gathered some things together to give a fantasy myth story. You had all the Asian touches. Like, you had the dragon style was definitely Asian dragon style.
Yeah.
With being more serpentine in that. And of course, you had kind of a martial arts feel to a lot of the fighting. And just the fact that like about 98% of the voice cast was Asian was impressive.
Yeah.
And I think probably a first for Western animation.
The one I found interesting with the voices was Alan Tudyk was actually in this.
Well, he was an animal yet
sorta.
Again. He was Tuk Tuk this time around, a giant potato bug, basically.
He is everywhere.
he loves doing animals. That's like his niche now. At least it wasn't like the dipsy, really stupid chicken from Moana.
although he was there.
Tuk Tuk has a little more intelligence, although he gets easily distracted.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So, that seems to be Alan Tudyk's niche now, is animal voices in animated features.
You can make a good career at that.
Yeah, well, he does. he's the chosen one for that now. But there's a lot of names people would recognize, too, because Raya is Kelly Marie Tran. The dragon is Awkwafina. Raya's dad is Daniel Dae Kim. Like, there's a lot of well-known actors and actresses behind the voices there. So it's definitely recommended. And if you have Disney Plus, it's free now. So,
And cool thing on Disney Plus, I just mentioned about the extra features to you, but the bonus features on this were amazing. Watching as the people put together like sound studio, because this was all done during the pandemic, most of it.
Yeah.
They had to finish they had just started it when, or they're getting ready to do the voice.
Yeah,
I think when the pandemic started, so everybody had to figure out how to record their stuff at home, and they're not traditionally voice actors.
Right.
Most of the traditionally voice actors, the people that's what they do, already have studios and things at home.
Exactly.
So these were regular actors that had to learn how to do this at home.
Yeah. It's like, let's find a closet to sit in and record our lines.
That's what the little kid did.
Yeah, the little kid who played the boat guy.
Yep.
He was actually in the closet.
Like, what else are you going to do? Like, no one, like you said, if you don't do voice acting and stuff, you're not going to have not only the studio, but you're not going to have any kind of soundproof rooms in your house.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, what was her name? I think her name was, is it Awkwafina? She had an actual recording tent moved in. That was set up her living room because she had a real the vault ceiling.
Yeah,
this looked like one of they had anything like that.
Yeah, it looked like one of the tents you'd see at an arts and craft show because it was 10 foot by 10 foot.
No, I don't think it was that big.
It looked like it.
It didn't look that big. I don't think it would have fit in her living room.
So,
but yeah, I mean they you know you have to come up with whatever you can do to get these things done. So the fact that they actually got it all done was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And the kids and animals being involved.
The only thing I had on a little bit was it was formulaic very much for a quest movie. Okay, a problem happens. Now we got to go for a quest for the entire movie and then beat it in the end. But it was still a fun ride through it.
But that's a typical journey.
Name a Disney animated film that isn't formulaic. That's the whole point of it. I mean, it's all about family. It's all about some kind of quest.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to have the feel-good stuff at some point. It's going to have the loss. It's going to have some adventure and some risk. So it's all, you know, it is the formula, but like it actually did feel a lot like Moana in that way because, you know, the princess goes out to save the village kind of thing. But it also has its own individual features, which was good. So yeah.
Where the whole world is being turned into stone. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That was a cool idea.
And it's definitely some great characters to have added to, just the Disney family in terms of, you know, the princesses and stuff like that. And warrior princesses is basically what we're getting now in a lot of the movies.
That's been like that since
that's
Brave.
That's a cool thing.
I think Brave was one of the ones that started a lot of that.
Yeah. Had a big influence on it.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I did this week was, because they just went on sale the other day, I bought our Black Widow tickets.
We need to do that still. We're probably going to do it this afternoon, possibly.
It's pretty satisfying, though, to, you know, after waiting for this movie for more than a year anyway, and to finally go ahead and buy advanced tickets for something.
You know? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that just because you have the tickets doesn't mean they can't still move it.
At this point, that's highly doubtful. Highly doubtful. Considering the theaters are doing pretty well with the movies they're showing now, like nothing's been changing, you know, Cruella's still doing okay out in the theaters, Quiet Place, all that kind of stuff. So, I seriously doubt there will be movement.
Yeah. Although I did hear, I guess The Heights opened this weekend and it's not doing as well as they had expected.
Well, but the other thing
it's a musical.
The Heights is on HBO Max too, though. So I know a lot of people who have seen it that way. I haven't watched it yet because I'm waiting on Kylan because I know he wants to see it.
Yeah.
So we're just going to watch it together when he comes home.
At some point, I want to take a chance and check it out because I've heard some of the stuff from Hamilton. I've not seen Hamilton yet, but it's not my type of musical. It's weird for me hearing hip-hop in the 1700s type setting. I mean, it'd probably be cool. But I don't know. I'm not a hip hop fan usually.
You're usually
this one has more traditional style music, doesn't it?
You're usually not into the history.
No,
either.
A little bit. It's still Lin-Manuel Miranda writing it. There's still a lot of hip hop in it.
Hmm.
I'll
give it a chance.
And
but
the main character, the actor, is the one who originated a role on Broadway in Hamilton, and he's in the version that's on Disney Plus.
Okay.
So he has a history with the man in the music. So, but it's based on kind of Lin-Manuel Miranda's younger years and the neighborhood he lived in and that kind of thing. So
yeah, I heard about that.
But it sounds very cool and it has. I've already heard some of the tunes, very catchy.
Ah, well, that's what makes a musical good. It makes it popular.
I mean,
for
that's
most
the
people.
Whole point. That's why you want to see a musical.
Yeah, if people don't walk out singing the songs that you were doing, then you didn't do a musical correctly.
Exactly.
They should be at least humming one of the tunes.
Right. Right. Exactly. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. What did we do this week other than just still recovering? It's still. I mean, we haven't touched on here, but the stuff outside of here has been so much that we've not even had time to really watch much TV or anything. I mean.
Now, we are going to talk about Loki this episode. So you better have watched the first episode. That's the only thing we're giving spoilers on because that's all that's out.
Well, that's Sweet Tooth. We were going to talk a little bit about Sweet Tooth. You guys finally watched that.
Yeah, we are going to talk about Sweet Tooth as well. And there's, I mean, I don't know if people are going to care much about spoilers for that, but
that was actually a really good show, I thought.
Okay.
For what
it was. We'll talk about that.
Like you said, for what it was. So, well, what news was there this week? You said there wasn't a whole lot, but.
There was a lot of stuff popping up about Loki and Sweet Tooth, but not a lot otherwise. One of the things about Sweet Tooth, though, there was a bit of an ad controversy. I don't know if you saw this, but Netflix got into not trouble, but created this controversy with an ad campaign because they basically took over the front page of USA Today with a giant ad for the series.
Okay.
And the ad was mocked up to look like it was a real edition of USA Today, but the stories were tied to the events of the series, and it had a headline that read, "Hybrid Babies Born Across the U.S. And a sub-headline said, "World Reacts to New Generation of Half-Human, Half-Animal Children with Both Awe and Concern."
So they turned USA Today into the National Enquirer.
Yeah, so that's problematic. And the concern wasn't that people would believe it, because people buying USA Today are typically not the ones looking for the National Enquirer. But media critics were concerned by the fact that USA Today is a respectable, reputable newspaper, and they were fine selling themselves out to put an ad like this on the front.
They still have... The point of newspapers is still to sell ads, though. It's not to anymore. The point of newspapers and your online news, all of it, is to sell ad revenue. Without that, they don't report anything. So they'll report anything if you give them enough money.
But the problem was more the front page aspect of it, making it look like that was the paper. And the criticisms were kind of evenly split between USA Today looking foolish for the sake of an ad and USA Today risking misinformation by essentially reporting the essence of fake news. So
they're afraid of it becoming the a world war or what you call it? Now I'm drawing a blank. Situation from back in the 30s.
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds. Yes. Yeah. It sounds like that's what they were afraid of. It would turn into a War of the Worlds type situation where some people actually believed what they're reading.
A lot of it was more the matter of a respectable, or at this point, formerly respectable newspaper making itself look foolish by doing it that way. Instead of, you know, it could have been a back page. It could have been the first inside page, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's what bothered a lot of the ones in the media who, you know, they make their living trying to be respectable at doing this kind of thing. So it created a bit of a kerfuffle, that's all. Now, another thing, I mentioned buying Black Widow tickets. Interestingly, the pre-order page for the premiere access on Disney Plus is, I'm not sure if you can buy it just yet, but, you know, if you want to pay the $30 to watch it on Disney Plus versus just, you know, paying your $10 movie ticket. The fine print on that page actually says the free access date. When all subscribers will be able to watch Black Widow. So if you don't want to go to the theater and you don't want to pay premiere access, you are going to have to wait until October 6th.
Wow.
This is not something that's going to be a 1 month thing. You have to remember, this is a Marvel movie. It's going to be in theaters for a while, and they are not going to give you that free access until well after. So
wait, doesn't Marvel have one dropping in early October also? Another one?
They have September is Shang-Chi.
Okay.
And then I think Eternals is November.
Okay.
But the other thing is those ones are not doing a Disney Plus run. Those are theaters only. So there's not the competition there. So you're going to have to wait July, August, September, like 3 months before you get to see Black Widow if you don't want to pay for it. So there you go.
Really, though, that's not bad, because the DVD release on these, or Blu-ray release, if you traditionally, the theatrical run is 3 to 4 months, and then it's another 3 to 4 months, maybe more, before it would actually be released to home video.
Right.
Or to streaming.
But the thing with this is, it's a much bigger movie than the other ones they've done this way. So, you know, because Raya and the Last Dragon, that was a couple months before, because it only just came out for free. And it just came out a couple months.
That one came out, I think, April, wasn't it?
It was March or April that came out.
Yeah, it was only like a month and a half before we got it. But like you said, Cruella just went on to premium.
Right. So that was, I think, why they released it when they did. So Cruella, we might not get until August for free or something.
What's the next premium access movie after Black Widow, though? Has Disney announced what their next one's going to be?
No. I mean, mostly they were doing it because of the pandemic and having to not being able to go to theaters.
And the fact that they're not, you know, so far haven't announced any more of them may mean they're not making as much money on the premium access as they thought they would. They're still going to do it while it's available, but.
Right, right. And in general, they make more money in the theater anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they don't have to offer it that way, they won't bother. And then you just have to wait until it gets released that way. But yeah, one of the other things that came out this week that a lot of people were looking forward to was the trailer for the Masters of the Universe Revelation series.
Yes.
For those who don't know, this is being done by Kevin Smith, and it's basically coming right after the one from the 80s. It's a continuation of the story.
Yeah.
And it finally looks like a decent animation. Like they're not giving you scrawny heroes. They're still sticking with the 80s overly muscular animated heroes. and of course, Mark Hamill is Skeletor. That's all you need. But it does have a good cast. So I put the trailer on our page. If you didn't catch it, it's there to watch, and it's got a great little soundtrack going with it that's going to appeal to all the 80s geeks.
I like it because I'm sitting here watching now, and it's like, obviously the animation is way better than what Funimation did with it anyway, but it still has that same similar feel to it. And the you can tell the CG backgrounds and stuff that they use, the plates are just seamless. It is beautiful looking at this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what we all wanted back in the 80s. Now, I hope the storylines and everything are as cheesy as they were then.
Right.
Because that's really hard to go back and watch that show. The one from the early 2000s was not bad, but the one from the 80s was really hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like going back and watching the old stuff.
Another thing from Netflix that I found while digging around, because, you know, lack of news this week, is for fans of a very particular video game called Cuphead.
Okay.
This is a game that's exceedingly popular for the past few years. It looks like cartoons from the 30s, but it's about, you know, dealing with the devil and going through various stages of the game. So Netflix apparently has the Cuphead show in development, and it is based on this game. It was greenlit back in 2019. So obviously with the pandemic, things get put on hold and they try and sort it out. So since then, a few voice cast announcements have been made, like True Valentino as Cuphead, Luke Millington Drake as the devil. But fans were kind of waiting on another big one. There's a character called King Dice, and he's not the main antagonist, but he is the devil's right-hand man. And in the game, he's pretty important because he's a necessary step to getting to new areas. The game has something to do with collecting things, and then you have to hand them into King Dice to get to the next area of the game. And he sings, and he has swagger, and it's been announced that he'll be voiced by Wayne Brady.
Okay.
So And apparently the announcement also included a clip of Brady voicing the king himself. And so everyone's pretty excited about that because we all know how kind of crazy Wayne Brady can be. People are happy about it. That there's no date yet. It's still a coming soon for Netflix. So that's what a lot of the Netflix announcements were this week, was all this coming soon stuff.
There was one that I noticed because of the stuff that Netflix had announced. I went through their coming soon list and all that. There was one I had no idea was even in the works. There's a new Underworld movie coming.
Yep.
Was this the fourth one? And they got Kate Beckinsale and the other one's coming back to do it. So.
Yeah, I think I saw two of them. I haven't seen them.
We bought a bundle on Vudu, so we have the digital copies of all of them.
Ah, okay.
So I think she did three, and then there was a prequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was kind of surprised by that. I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't even know this was in production.
So there you go.
This is another series. This Fear Street looks interesting.
So some other things coming out. We got news from FX this week about some premiere dates, which is good news. They finally announced that Why the Last Man series is going to debut on the FX on Hulu. So basically you're getting it on Hulu.
Yeah.
On September 13th, which is kind of amazing. It's been a few years in development. They stopped it at one point. They changed actors. They changed all this stuff. Finally coming September 13th, which is kind of pushing it because apparently they haven't concluded filming yet.
Okay.
They concludes, but I mean, they're near the end of the series in the filming, so they can start the series, I guess. And the filming isn't going to be concluding until early July. So, the series starts in September. It's the sort of series that's not necessarily going to need a lot of post effects work and that kind of thing. It's an apocalypse sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, so we'll see what happens. We'll keep updated on the Why the Last Man.
Well, also,
they also set, dates for returning shows. We're going to be getting the premiere of the 12th season of Archer on FXX on August 25th. And What We Do in the Shadows, third season, is coming on September 2nd.
Okay. Well,
so that's
when, when it comes to them launching before they finish filming, that TV does that all the time. Remember, right, all the CW shows, usually they get the first like 7 or 8 in the can and are ready to go, and they're still filming the rest when they launch the season.
Right.
So,
but a lot of times it doesn't happen for the first season.
Yeah.
You know, like they like to have the majority of it in the can before they get. So the other thing is, we don't know how many episodes it is.
Yeah.
I don't think they've even announced if it's a half hour or an hour. It's likely to be an hour given the type of show it is.
Also, streaming does things differently usually that, like you said, they like to have it ahead of time because the regular broadcast shows, they'll take breaks here and there and run a rerun. You can't do that, or they don't do that with streaming. If you don't skip a week, because I think they're afraid that people won't come back.
Right, and that's the other interesting thing, that this is on Hulu, so
it'll be weekly.
It might be weekly, it might be all at once, because Hulu's done both.
Yeah, but usually if it's one of their shows,
being FX, being FX on Hulu, I think it'll be weekly.
Yeah, usually I think it's if they made the show, or if it's something like a broadcast show that they're running, it'll be weekly. If it's something they've bought that they already have it all, they'll drop it all at once.
Right.
Like a lot of the British shows and stuff like that, they'll buy the whole season.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got, considering it's going to be in September, we should be getting some kind of trailer or teaser probably by July. So we'll see what happens with that. The last story I have is definitely a niche geekness, but we know the Olympics are coming up, like it or not. Apparently they're still doing them. it's questionable in Japan right now. So, you know, like it or not, they're doing them. Sanrio has come out with some Olympic merch. And if that name sounds vaguely familiar, their icon is Hello Kitty.
Ah.
And she's going to be popping up on tons of Team USA apparel, apparently.
Oh, nice.
Sanrio and Team USA created several co-branded Hello Kitty Team USA collections, including apparel, sleepwear, accessories, collectibles, and more, that will be available at a variety of retailers nationwide. Select Sanrio stores and Sanrio.com have already dropped a line of apparel and accessories that includes collectible Funko Pop figures. So you've got basically Hello Kitty and Team USA gear, Team USA Hello Kitty t-shirts, special enamel pins, and more, all featuring the kitty playing Summer Olympic sports. And a limited line will also be available on the Team USA website.
So she's the new Mr. T.
Sure.
You don't remember the Mr. T cartoon?
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, Hello Kitty is, you know, is pretty darn popular. And I find it interesting that they teamed with Team USA to come out with all this merch, because Hello Kitty is an Asian, well, originally
it's straight
from
up
Asia,
Japanese.
So it's like it's an Asian property.
I was surprised when I watched The Toys That Made Us. They did a whole episode on Hello Kitty, because everybody has heard of Hello Kitty. You've seen stuff around, but no one had any idea where it comes from, almost.
Right.
Because it's one of those weird things that showed up in the 80s here in America that didn't have a TV show backing it.
Yeah.
Most of a brands like that would have been like a TV show that starts it, then all of a sudden you get the pop, and then it explodes. Hello Kitty right. somehow exploded across the ocean without the backing of media.
Right.
But it was
It was just a cutesy property. That's the thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, if what was her name? Lisa, she did all the colorful unicorns and stuff. It falls in the line.
Oh, right, yeah.
It falls in the line of that. Where, like, you name it, you had it. The Trapper Keepers and the stickers and the pencils.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It fell along the line of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had the appeal of the cutesy anime-ish characters, or the just the cutesy Asian characters that they would come out with, because she had a whole Hello Kitty wasn't alone, she had a whole bunch of friends,
yeah,
so you know. But then you could get like the Pez dispensers, and you could get the coloring books, and you could get the t-shirts, and then it became a thing.
Yeah.
Hello Kitty's
let me tell you, there's certain adult things you can get that are Hello Kitty, well, which just will, like, yeah, you can't unsee that.
well, that, did you
and
see?
And they seem to be branded!
Well, they do, but Hello Kitty's got a coffee truck that tours around.
Yeah.
It was just at Cleveland, I think a month ago, maybe.
There are pop-ups. There are pop-ups for Hello Kitty of the stores and little cafes as well. And it's just a thing.
It's funny because you sit back and listen or think about it, because this is obviously it was a property that hit here in the 80s. And it's like you think the 80s, if you think of traditionally what's quote unquote called boy toys, there's very few that were like this that popped up without media backing of some sort. But there's plenty of ones that were aimed at young girls that did. It worked for somehow.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, but young guys,
didn't need the shows and cartoons and stuff to go along with it. We could do that ourselves. We had our imagination.
Boys had to be taught how to what to do with these toys.
Exactly. The guys needed something more. I don't know.
Hello Kitty is not a cat.
It's what?
Hello Kitty is not a cat.
What is it?
It's a girl. Nope.
It's a
Hello
girl?
Kitty's a girl.
It's a little girl. Hello Kitty is a little girl.
Okay.
She's not a cat.
She looks like a cat.
She's a little girl.
Well, okay, so this should be a good segue into Sweet Tooth.
Yeah. cats and people and animals and... I like the concept of this. It's an interesting concept. An interesting way to do a post-apocalyptic show or world without, like, the nuclear holocaust.
Right, and...
And it's another one that is very interesting coincidence that they started all this and they got this story going before what happened in real life, because it feels real close to reality on the beginning of this, the beginning of it, the concept.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and I mean, it is what happens in the comic, which was done years ago too.
That's what's that's scary about all this.
So the beginning of the first episode, especially, might make a lot of people very uncomfortable. It's just kind of a warning, you know, that it might make people uncomfortable based on what we've gone through the past year, because it is about a pandemic. It's about a disease that's killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like you said, it's just kind of freaky that they started this before things happened. And, you know, you could tell that while they were filming, they were influenced.
Yeah. You can feel it. I don't read the blogs and stuff, but the conspiracy theorist blogs probably going bananas on the amount of media that's come out about that's based on pandemic stories that started before this pandemic started.
Right.
You know, the conspiracy theorists are going bananas on that.
Right. So, I mean, it's a basically by the end, you kind of get a clue as to how this pandemic came to be. But they make you wait for the full season before they even give you that little hint.
Most of this, but if you take out the hybrid kids, it is just a standard post-apocalyptic journey movie or journey show.
Yeah.
You add in the hybrid kids and the details of what the pandemic was and stuff, and that's what makes it different. Other than that, it is the same show we've seen hundreds of times of like a Road Warrior or Mad Max. All these types of movies, just in a little bit of a different setting.
Well, yeah, it mutated the kids to survive.
Exactly.
For the kids to survive.
Right, and that's just it. Like, you talked about things being formulaic. That's kind of why I didn't really get into this show very much. It was just like you could tell what was going to happen as you went along.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I kind of preferred the pandemic side of the story to the hybrid kid side of the story. That just got boring to me. It was different, But the thing I don't like is that they said how much different it is from the comic, because I haven't read the comic. I don't plan on it.
Yeah.
But they talked about the show being a brighter tone and less showy violence and that kind of thing than it is in the comic. I think I would have been disappointed had I read the comic and then watched the show.
Well, I've just started the comic. I've only like one or two issues in, so it's not, we've not even gotten that far to see all that yet.
Right. Well, and because that's what I've heard. The comic is darker. The comic has a lot more violence. I think that might have worked better, but it's almost like they were trying to make it a little more family friendly.
Yeah, this is definitely because it is. I think rated M, but it's aimed at older teenagers or even a little bit younger than that, maybe like 13, 14 year olds. The language is the only thing that really gives it the rating.
You do have violence. There's a lot of fighting going on. There's an entire group in the show whose purpose is to hunt down these hybrid children.
Yeah.
So there's going to be the violent aspects there, but a lot of the violence they show is in shadows. It's not overly bloody. You know, there's the one fight when Big Man was taking on those guys and swinging bear traps at their head. Okay, maybe I like a certain style of show or something, but I wanted to see some of that happening.
But like we said, this was aimed at a mid to younger teenage audience.
Exactly. So that's what you get with it. Don't go in expecting a lot of the violence. It's not that the violence isn't there. It's not that the tension isn't there. There's plenty of tension. There's plenty of, you know, can they outrun them? Yeah. Or, you know, will the doctor be able to do this or whatever? There's plenty of tension there. So it's definitely not made for kids.
Yeah. Well, it's almost the whole show is aimed and focused more on the story, the characters and relationships than it is on the actual actions going around. Because that's why you basically are following three separate stories.
Yeah.
Throughout it.
And by the end of the season, those stories come together. All of a sudden, you realize how they're connected. Some of them are connected in ways you didn't necessarily expect. Other ones just happen to come across each other by the end.
Like Bear's story.
Yeah, and there's an obvious setup for a second season. They have not announced anything. But well, they're obviously changes hoping at
Netflix,
for it.
From what I've heard, there's a bunch of changes that have happened at the top in the last 2 to 3 months at Netflix. So that we may or may not get that. Supposedly, that's what happened to Jupiter. Was there's been some major changes at the top, and they want to refocus some things. So that may be what happened there. That may happen to this.
And it does depend on, like, critics, for the most part, like the show. So it does depend on the numbers they get of people watching it.
Yeah.
And whether it's worth it to them. Because there's obvious special effects going on, but a lot of it's practical. Like the hybrid kids, it's makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
all except for, what was his name, Bobby? That was definitely a CG character. You can't.
that's one of the problems I had was Bobby. They should have not tried to do kids who had animal heads.
Yeah.
They should not have tried that because, I mean, you know it's all fake anyway, but that felt extra fake.
Well, the fact that they didn't, you could tell the budget wasn't as big as some of the other ones because you could tell he was completely CG.
Yeah.
He didn't, I mean, he was. It was very good for the budget they had, but it still was, you could tell that he wasn't actually there.
Well, yeah, they were trying to make kind of more animal than more
kid. It kind of took you out of things because the rest of the kids looked reasonably believable.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of took you out when he suddenly showed up and you're like, oh, there's a Muppet.
Yeah. Well, the makeup team, you got to give them props for the people who did do the physical makeup, the animal changes to the kids, especially to Sweet Tooth himself, where he had the animatronic ears and other stuff move on him. And it was phenomenal work on that.
Yeah. It was very believable for sure. A lot of the CGI and stuff that would be happening is actually atmospheric. Like, because you have a pandemic apocalypse, you have a lot of abandoned places, you have a lot of burned down places. So that's what's happening. It's a lot of background stuff that they would have had to have worked on. So it's not, and it wasn't noticeable in the sense that you're like, oh yeah, that's going to be fake. It all meshed together very well.
Well, the nice thing also is they made this close enough to when everything collapsed that there is still some semblance of the old world still there. So a lot of places still have power. They still can run gasoline. The trains are still running. There's a lot of things that you. It feels like this is like a week after the apocalypse happens.
Right, right.
Because most of these type shows, they're so far out that there is. It's almost like the old world was a distant memory to the old timers.
Yeah.
No one else remembers what happened. It's like, no, this is people make it. I mean, it obviously takes place a little time afterwards, but the world hasn't collapsed in a week. We may be 6 months or a year out, but everything is still running some.
It's basically like it happened 10 years ago because Gus is 10.
Yeah.
So it happened 10 years ago because that's when Gus's quote unquote father took him out into Yellowstone. By the way, apparently, if you want to abandon the world, go to Yellowstone.
I think that was just no one will find you for a long time.
From where I think that may have been also just where they were based the story to start with. That's the largest big open space they could think of or something.
Right.
Or also it gave you a touchstone of where you're at in the world, in the country.
And so you have basically, essentially it started 10 years ago, but obviously things were going on and didn't really fall apart completely until, you know, a couple of years after it started. So you're probably looking at like 6 to 8 years that things have really fallen apart.
Which, like I said, I liked the fact that they didn't say, oh, all of the society collapsed out of nowhere. No, they've morphed into something else, but the basic necessities are still there. If you're willing to, like, there's that one community that everything was almost 100% perfect. It looks perfect, obviously. It's a Pleasantville.
Right.
But then you see, it's like, oh, they have solar stuff everywhere so that they can collect energy. Yep. That's why they still have power. They still have civilization and things in their community.
Yeah, but the second they see something with the neighbor, they burn them.
Yeah.
And their house.
Then you find out how twisted they really are. That was a horror movie aspect.
Then you have, you know, like, you're like, okay, all these cars are around, but then you see that the doctor has a horse.
Yeah.
That's how he gets around.
Mm-hmm.
And the horse comes in handy for the Karen of the neighborhood, put it that way. so it to me, it's not the kind of show that was necessary to watch. I don't feel like I would have missed anything if I didn't watch it. It was just an okay show.
Yeah.
But it was well done in terms of the shooting of it and the atmosphere of it to give you the feel that you could actually get into it and believe this is going on.
This one was, well, same point I've been making the whole time. It's almost like it was more of a realistic post-apocalyptic world.
Right.
This is, you could see that the world could
scares people.
Turn into something like this.
That's what scares people.
And it,
yeah. They, like yeah, you said, that's it, why it's scary. Because this looks like this might actually be able to happen.
It gave you multiple sides. It gave you the doctor and his wife who are trying to survive and trying to find a cure and trying to hide things. But then it gave you the one who discovered the zoo was abandoned and could be lived at and was trying to create a preserve to help save the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you get the last men who are trying to either kill them all or capture them for research. But then you also get Sweet Tooth, who, like Big Man said, he's got more hope than he's ever seen in someone. Maybe it was that side that I didn't like that much. It's like the kid was just too hopeful. He got to be smacked down a little bit or something.
Well, like we said before, it totally makes sense for the situation he was given. He was born and lived with his dad the entire time, and his dad is telling him the utopian stuff of how the world was, how fantastic everything is, how you follow these rules and everything will be fantastic. He's never had negative happen, so he doesn't have that cynical side.
But he doesn't realize that his dad had the kid dropped off on him on the first day.
Yeah, that was the cool. That was a twist I didn't see coming.
Finding out that his dad basically became a dad day of.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, I have to run and now I have a kid that I have to hide.
He's raised his whole life thinking his mom and dad loved each other for years.
Right. I don't think his dad was trying to make things sound fantastic because he was always warning him.
Yeah.
Like, if you hear a growl, what do you do? If you hear a human, what do you do? If you hear this, he was preparing him to basically stay in hiding and stay safe.
Yeah.
He was telling him the world was a dangerous place.
But he never actually dealt with it firsthand.
No, he didn't have to until he was absolutely forced to.
Exactly.
and that guy showed up and things happened, and then his dad died. That's not a spoiler. It's going to happen. The dad died. Because it's got to be something to make him
It's almost
home.
A Disney but show.
The father knew, right. the who became his father, he knew the danger when he was looking down with her down into the window and watching what they were doing to her research. He knew what
exactly.
danger mm-hmm. Gus was going to be in.
Exactly. He knew it. So it was kind of cute when Gus is out in the real world and discovering things he'd never known for the first time, like his, you know, his first chocolate bar.
Yeah.
he knew about maple syrup or what was it? Maple juice or tree juice?
No, I think they called it maple syrup. But it was okay. Like, that was his drink. He drank that like it was Kool-Aid or something.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it was like,
how's this kid still have teeth?
And then he discovered the chocolate bars. And well, then you meet those other kids, and the one that eats all the candy really doesn't have any teeth.
Well, the cool thing I thought also with the hybrids, they show how Gus has heightened abilities of certain, like you would have from a deer, but it's not right. like he's a superhero. Like he's got a better sense of smell. His hearing is a little bit better, but it's not right. like he's some mutant from the X-Men.
But he also, yeah, because it basically shows all of the hybrid kids have heightened senses and awareness of things with their animal side. Because if you look, when he tries to get away from someone, the first thing he does is lower his head and ram them with his antlers.
Yeah.
You know, so he has that sensibility of a deer that would do that. And when you find some of the other kids and see the way they act and react to certain things, they're using their animal sides. It was interesting. I mean, it was an interesting enough show. A lot of people will probably enjoy it. I won't watch a second season if it comes on though.
Yeah,
I'm not
it's
that
a new
interested.
Evolution of yeah. humans is what it is.
Yeah, but I know we enjoyed it, huh?
And then you have the whole question of like, why did they bother with the hybrids? Like, why, you know, well, at that time, why? And the other one who worked with the mom, the quote mom, was just like, well, you know, they're in a lab. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, they were doing. That was the thing. That's an old, age old story. Question of
yeah,
why science for the sake of science?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you do it? Because the question's there.
Yeah. But now that you know,
not thinking
that,
what could happen, it's just we got to answer this question.
Now that you know by the end about the virus coming up and potentially being created in the same lab that the hybrid kid was created,
as a mistake, yeah.
Yeah. So does one have to exist to deal with the other? So that's, you know, stuff they can go into in the next season. But they mm-hmm. did say that the first season barely gets into the comics.
Yeah.
So there's a lot they can go with if they decide to keep going.
Yeah, I believe I looked, DC Infinite has the entire first run of this on there. And the Sweet Tooth the Return, I think, or something like that, came out last year or the year before, and they have the first yeah. issue of that up.
Right.
So
the original is 40 issues.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of story.
There's a lot of stuff. Well, that's like where when they started. I mean, this is not going to be a Walking Dead, but like when they started Walking yeah. Dead, they had so much they could have went into, and eventually they went past where the comics were.
Right, right.
But a lot of that was also skipping over stuff.
And they've changed a lot with, you know, with the permission of the creator, even like Jeff Lemire even said.
Yeah, I think he's
you know,
one of the writers in here too.
Yeah, and he's a consultant and a writer on the show, and so he knew what was going to happen with it, and. You know, he's able to work with them on it to keep the characters that he
yeah.
created.
Well, most comic writers at this point understand that if you get optioned into a movie or a TV deal, if they allow you to help them, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
If not, they're going to do what they want to do. That's just the way you're going to do their vision of it. It's not going to be what you saw
right.
on the comic book page put right on the TV screen. They're not. No
right.
one's going to ever do that.
Yeah.
There's been some yeah. really close ones, but you can't be 100% precious with it.
And there still has to be, like, a lot of companies know these days, you have to play to the fans to make sure you have a built-in audience, but you also have to open things up to keep the fans and keep them guessing, so you're mm-hmm. not giving them the exact same thing, and also open it up enough for the mainstream audience to actually want to come in and watch these things.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times, there's many, all kinds of stuff that works fantastic for comic audiences and in comic books that will not play for a mainstream audience at all.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
We will accept a lot more stuff on that page than the general audience will on a screen.
Exactly.
It could be the dumbest thing in the world, but it's just a comic book. It happens.
I mean, let's you know, take the example of MODOK.
Yeah.
We'll accept it.
MODOK 100% is a threat to Iron Man. Yes. He's a giant floating head, and it's MODOK.
Giant floating head, super intelligent, one of the worst villains ever. Okay. But speaking of villains, now we can get to Loki.
Yes. Who's never been a villain. At least ask him. He's never been the villain.
He's never been the villain.
Of course, remember that comes up on Wednesdays. It's staying on Wednesdays the whole time.
Yes.
They're not switching to Fridays.
It looks like that may actually be their plan now so that they can run.
Yep.
Like we were saying before, the fact that Star Wars and Marvel, it's not exactly the same audience, but they're probably not going to want them running the exact same day. So it looks like Marvel is going to be Wednesdays.
Well, interestingly, a lot of people who are Marvel fans and watch things on certain schedules still didn't watch it till the weekend anyway. So it kind of doesn't matter. It's not going to be a Marvel thing only because I did notice just this morning they said that the next Monsters cartoon, is it Monsters at Work?
Yeah.
From Monsters, Inc. That's coming on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay.
When it releases, they kind of adjusted the date on that. So they're trying different things, basically.
Yeah. Well, they may be trying basically turning Disney Plus into a Disney Channel type of thing where every day has something different.
Yeah.
You can watch it anytime you want,
The other thing is you can give people things to watch on Wednesday, then your movie premieres on Friday.
Yeah.
So you're not, you know, competing with yourself over time.
It'd be interesting to see with the popularity of things like Pluto TV and Stir and some of these other that are basically a streaming cable network, that I'm wondering if Disney might try something like that and actually have just a channel running 24 hours so that at some point you flip it on, it's just whatever's on Disney Plus is running. So you'd have your premieres of these on that, and then maybe an hour after it premieres on the broadcast, on quote-unquote broadcast on Disney Plus, you can stream it from any time you want. That'd be an interesting concept. So, like, it'd be like Wednesday nights, you get whatever the Marvel thing premieres at like 8. And then then you just run Disney movies or whatever, Disney Plus content 24/7. And the premieres happen at their right times.
Right. Well, I mean, Disney still has their own channels, though, on cable. So they have no reason to do anything else.
I'm just hoping to get the Disney Afternoon lineup running in the afternoons again.
Well, you can watch it anytime you want on Disney Plus.
It's not
you can
the
pick
same.
Your
you
shows.
Gotta choose it then. It's not just a turn it on and it's there.
Yes, it is.
You gotta choose it though.
You can create your own mix. Anyways, back to Loki. Now, before we get into the basics of it, according to one of the streaming stat organizations, Loki managed to beat out both WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier's debut numbers. It was watched in 890,000 households on premiere day, whereas Falcon and Winter Soldier got 759,000 and WandaVision was at 655,000.
I predict we may be seeing this for the next couple of shows. As Marvel makes more shows, more people are jumping on and saying, hey, I want to see this at the beginning.
Well, the other thing is the popularity of Loki, though. He is one of the most popular MCU characters. So you had some people who wouldn't have necessarily watched Falcon and Winter Soldier who were going to jump on board for it. So,
And you get the quote-unquote OG Loki from this Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is the original Loki before he got all the changes made.
And the good thing is they started the show by showing you, by basically drilling it into your head, which Loki this was.
Yeah.
You know, this is the guy that they had just captured. This is the guy that grabbed that Tesseract and disappeared. Then we find out where he went. So it's kind of like it's delayed gratification, but almost instant in a sense, because now you know after all these years and you know why he's called a variant. And you know why he has screwed up, why they were there to capture him. I mean, it did a really good job in a short amount of time giving you the basics of the entire series.
Mm-hmm. And Loki is now Jean-Claude Van Damme,
obviously,
the time cop.
Huh?
Loki is now Jean-Claude Van Damme, the time cop.
There you go. but obviously you have plenty of Avengers references, not only right at the beginning in the scene, but throughout. And it was interesting to see him, well, number one, Loki being Loki, trying to be like, well, I'm not supposed to be here. Let me go.
I'm a god. Why are you trying to put a god away?
Yeah. When he was trying to use his powers and nothing was happening.
He's like, he's just like, hang on, stupid. Wait a minute. It'll be awesome when it happens. Give it a minute.
Yeah. gods do not plead.
And he looks in the guy's drawer and sees like a ton of the rocks.
Yeah, that was one of the best Easter eggs in the world when he opens the drawer and sees a pile of Infinity Stones.
Yep. Nothing works at the TVA. Nothing. You can't use magic. You can't use powers. You can't use anything. That's how that shows you right there how powerful the TVA is, with the fact that they have so many of these Infinity Stones and all these other things, and nothing works there.
Yeah.
They're paperweights.
They're pretty paperweights.
And apparently the people who work there don't know just everyday life, because when Loki tells the guy he'll gut him like a fish, what's a fish?
Yeah. Well, also you got to think they're outside of the timeline, which is outside of the universe. All these things work in the universe they were created in.
Yeah. They're outside reality as in itself. I mean, they're outside of all of it. So it's just kind of a fascinating look at an organization that's been in Marvel since the 80s. It came out, what was it? In Thor 86, comics.
86, I believe,
In 86, yeah. So it doesn't seem like it's been around for that long, but 86 was quite a while ago.
the weird thing, the one I read on that a little bit, I read the one article about, from Den of Geek had a good article on the Easter eggs, and they were saying how like the TVA was created then, and it was a big part in that general storyline, but it's only been seen a little bit here and there until now and out of nowhere. It's all of a sudden the main plot thing.
Well, it's kind of a good thing, though, because like it's a mystery organization.
Yeah.
So you can almost think of it as always being behind the scenes because they know what's going on.
Yeah.
But they don't have to interject until something goes very wrong. And of course, Loki makes something go very wrong.
Yeah. Or they interject all the time, but you don't know they're there.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, once they fix, because it shows them going to the various places when you find out that they have teams that are being killed, and they have a device that resets the timeline at that point, so the team isn't found and all that kind of thing. So there, it gives you the first episode gave you a good look at what the show is going to be, how time works in the universe, in a little better explanation than what we got in Avengers with the skewed timelines and stuff like that. Because we got that lovely little video, the cartoon of the little man who was just going to work and something went wrong, and it explained what happened, and it explained what a variant was, and it explained how you're going to be put on trial. And
even though you didn't know there was laws against this.
And we don't want complete madness because we've already had some kind of war. That was an interesting little thing they added, that there's been some big war that happened already. But for those who may have recognized the voice but didn't really think about it much, we had Miss Minutes, voiced by Tara Strong.
Oh, okay.
Who we know from so many things. She actually has 602 screen credits.
Can you say voice actor?
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people know her because like she was Bubbles in Powerpuff Girls. She's Timmy Turner in Fairly Odd Parents, Twilight Sparkle in My Little Pony. And of course, she's Raven in Teen Titans. And she's also done a lot of other Marvel characters in various animated versions like Mary Jane Watson, Scarlet Witch, and Jessica Jones.
She was also Harley Quinn for a while in different animated shows.
Yes. So, you know, she's definitely got the cred behind it, and it was an interesting little character they added, to help you along to learn about the TVA and what you've done wrong. It was a very happy little video for telling you you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
But, the other interesting thing was, meeting the new characters that we've met. Obviously Agent Mobius, like that kind of name. That's Owen Wilson. He's the look that all the agents had in the comics for the TVA. They were all to look like the same person, which was a tribute to the guy who was concerned with consistency in Marvel Comics. And he's trying to lead Loki along and be nice about things and explain things to him and, you know, not getting anywhere. and Loki discovers for himself. It was an interesting turn. I think you got huge character development suddenly in this one episode, because you had Loki being himself at the beginning. Then he watched his entire file, and he watched what happened to his mother, and he watched what happened to himself by the end of the file.
He was not impressed by his death.
No, and that changed him. And I think that's what we're going to see in the second episode, especially why he decides to work along with them.
Yeah. Well, also, we get to see who the villain of this show is, which is it's definitely a Loki show.
Yes.
Because you find out who the big bad is.
Because the villain's Loki.
Exactly. He's the hero and the villain of this show. No wonder Tom Hiddleston was like, okay, I'll do the show. I get to be everybody.
How often do you get that? How often do you get the fact that you're the hero and the villain, but it's two characters, it's not just the one.
Yeah. That's what's cool about this being about time and everything. It's kind of like the feel of what you get with Legends of Tomorrow on the DC side, where you get people from all kinds of different parts of the timeline, so you never know what you're going to get when you actually bring someone out of this.
And it'll be interesting to see how this Loki, like where this Loki came from, who's so evil that he's killing these teams. Like that's the thing. Like Loki's done a lot of bad things, but he doesn't often outright kill people. And it'll be interesting to see why. And at the same time, there is the fact that it could be the female Loki that's doing it, because we know that Loki is gender fluid and has shown up as different genders over time in the comics, etc. So it could be the female version of Loki that's doing this.
Didn't we see that, though? Didn't we see him lower the cowl at one point, so you see it actually is him, Tom Hiddleston?
It was in shadow. You didn't see that it was him. And I just want to point out one thing so that people don't go on this wrong. Don't take the variant path. When you see Agent Mobius in the church and the little girl points to the stained glass window and you see what looks to be a devil, a lot of people automatically went, oh, it's Morpheus. No, it's not. It's meant to look like Loki with the big horns.
Oh, okay. I was thinking actual devil, being a kid from that time frame.
Now, well, that's what they're seeing him at. The little kid is seeing it as the devil sort of thing. But it was intended. It was purposely done. So you have the big Loki horns to actually make it look like that is representative of the evil Loki.
Okay.
So just don't take the wrong path. It's not going there. That came right from like the writer producer. It's not going there.
Yeah, they decided to go with an image that looks like a different image.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on, it's a church. It's representative of something.
You thought that she was Joan of Arc.
Yeah, I thought maybe that was Joan of Arc with the time. I didn't remember the exact time frame she's from, but I knew it was the 1500s is when this was.
Oh, right.
And I think they actually called her Joan at some point.
I don't think they called her anything. They just made her spit out the
I don't remember.
I don't think they called her anything. The gum that the kid had, the kablooey gum, that was not a specific reference to anything, but it was more of an homage to the corny little ads you used to get in comic books.
Yeah.
For all kinds of gums or candies or x-ray glasses or that kind of, that was thrown in as that. So that's not an Easter egg to something specific. But the other thing to notice in this is the other main new character we get is Ravona Renslayer, the judge that we see with Loki. She is a former TVA hunter and is now a judge. The interesting thing is in the comics, she was a time traveling princess and was directly linked to Kang the Conqueror. And Kang is very concerned with time travel and timelines.
Yeah.
And we already know that Kang is showing up in the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. So it'll be interesting to see if they make the connection with her and Kang or not, if they're keeping that part of the character, since he is going to be part of the universe, and whether by the end we have a stronger connection to him that will lead us a little to Ant-Man.
Yeah. Well, before I read the Easter egg things, I thought she was more of a one-off character. Just as she was there to advance the story at that point, because she only had a couple lines, it was just to set him up with Owen Wilson. I thought that was the whole point of that. I mean, the little aside that Owen had with her, was an interesting thing, but in Marvel, a lot of times those little interesting things like that, that's all it is.
Right, right.
So I didn't realize that, but you can see she's going to be a character farther in the series.
Yeah, because I like from when she like because they announced who she was a while back, so that it wasn't a surprise who she was. So it will be interesting, and I'm hoping we get more of that the main guard that Loki had interesting time with. If you thought you recognized her, it's because she was the sister in Lovecraft Country.
Ah, okay, yes.
Yeah, if you were wondering where you saw her before. So I do hope we get more of that little altercations between them because that was satisfying.
Then the whole sequence, all of the play, a lot of the comedy in this, especially the TVA comedy stuff, was that rewind device necklace or brace collar they had. That thing was awesome. You know they had a lot of fun writing that and playing with that and doing it.
You can't escape. If that collar's on you, you literally cannot escape because they can just put you back to where you were.
Rewind, your body goes back, but you remember where you were.
and the funny part was when Loki decided to do all this moving around and Mobius finally pressed the button and he went back and fell on the floor and he was like, oh, it puts you back, but not where the furniture was.
Uh-huh. Well, the great part is then also, because they use it to show how smart Loki really is, because he figured out how to use that as a way to get out of stuff, too. Loki's running around doing a bunch of stuff, and then he gets in trouble, bang, he's back in the other room where he was originally.
Exactly. And that's the thing. The other thing about that made this kind of funny was it's this big, important organization dealing with the sacred timeline, and yet it's complete bureaucracy.
Oh yeah,
it's all paperwork. It's all office jobs. Like it's the sort of thing where you're like, you know, you're reading a comic book and you're imagining these great things you could be a part of, but you have this agency that you could basically just get stuck in an office job. And you could be the mail clerk, or you could be stuck at the front desk, or you could be the guy who has to get someone to sign every word they've ever said.
And I love it. Every time Loki asks a question, it prints a new one off.
A new one. Sign this. Sign this. Sign it now.
Okay, sign this also. And
or
now
the
this
guy
too.
Next to the guy next to the security scanner, and then, you know, are you a robot? No. What happens if I'm a robot? Well, it melts you. He's like, what if I'm a robot and I don't know? Wait.
We'll find out.
So, you know, it's got the usual Marvel humor. You get a lot of little things like that in the Marvel stuff. So it was a good start. I think it was a really good start. I think it may have been the strongest first episode of these three series that we've seen.
Yeah, I heard saw a lot of places were talking about how it's closer to WandaVision than Falcon Winter Soldier. My impression was it was almost dead center between them. Because it had the silliness, zaniness, and the craziness of WandaVision, but it has the straight-up storyline of a Falcon and Winter Soldier. Where WandaVision, for the first five or six episodes, you had no idea there's actually a story going on. It's just, it was hard to figure out what is the story here, what's going on.
Yeah,
this had the zaniness of that, but didn't have the confusion.
Well, I think that the thing is, this had... The only confusion was the fact that you were in a new place, new organization and some new characters, but so much of what's happened with Loki you already knew about. Plus they showed you, they took you through his file. They took you through some of the timeline stuff. So that part you already knew and you were getting refreshed. And I just think it was a really good episode for setting up the entire series, which the other, like, especially WandaVision, you were supposed to question everything going in.
Yeah, they drop you in the middle of it and give you no explanation at all.
You weren't supposed to know what was going on. And Falcon and Winter Soldier, it was a more straightforward show anyway.
Yeah, it felt more like the movies.
In terms of being reality-based and the action that was going on and everything happening in the order that it was supposed to happen. Loki, you're not going to get everything in order. And there's going to be a lot of back and forth, as we already know from this first episode. I mean, they were in what, five different times or something during the course of the episode.
But it feels like it's going to be more like what you traditionally see as a time travel show. It'll be like a Quantum Leap or any of the ones like that, where each episode you'll be in a different general time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Fixing what's going on at that time, trying to figure out what's going on.
And the other thing is, it's not just going to be the time, but the place, because obviously in the Marvel universe, there's a possibility of him going somewhere to Asgard or going to some other part of the galaxy. He might not actually stay on Earth.
They may bring in even more of the multiverse sides of it so that when Doctor Strange comes out, people have a better idea of what's going on than where we're at now.
Well, I mean, and there have already been little digs at that. They've actually used the word madness a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, it's also Loki.
Yeah. But that was on purpose to reference that movie. And Tom Hiddleston has said there will be some interesting guest appearances or cameos showing up.
Yeah.
So
I would not be surprised if they, because the way the tech works and how seamless it is now, if they didn't just take scenes out of the movies and add him in them and they're reacting into the movie scene that's already shot.
Well, I mean, the opening scene, there were a couple different shots in there.
Yeah.
Than what was in the Avengers movie when he got caught in that. So they already have done that.
I don't remember in the original Avengers movie, is that how Loki got out of that, or was that just from Infinity War or Endgame? I don't remember. Well, I gotta go back and watch.
That was just from Endgame, because that's when the time travel took place.
Okay, so in the original movie, then none of that actually happened. I don't remember that scene.
His original timeline, he was captured and taken away.
Yeah.
So it's only when the time travel happened that the screw up happened with the briefcase, because Hulk came bounding out.
Yeah. Hulk was Hulk.
And it went wonky. but so it'll be interesting to see who might show up. I mean, there's a strong possibility of other Asgardians. I think that's your strongest possibility.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see Thor.
I don't see Thor, but I see like his friends, what are they called? The Warriors or whatever.
Yeah, they could show up. Or
Heimdall might be there.
Heimdall might, because it's different timelines, so he would still be alive. And of course, there's random Avengers could show up. You never know.
Yeah.
Depending where they're sending him and what's going on, because where the teams have been killed so far had nothing to do with stuff that happened in the movies.
And also, this is a time travel show. You can go backwards or forwards or in and out and up and down. And well, it's not just time travel. It's all the time and space. This is Marvel's attempt at doing Doctor Who.
Exactly. That Loki is becoming the new Doctor Who, which is appropriate. So yeah, it's obviously, if you're a Marvel fan, you're watching this anyway. If you're a fan of the MCU, the movies, you're watching it because you know it's going to have some effect in some way. I don't know how directly this might affect the coming movies, except to add to the multiverse aspect and the time aspect of Kang the Conqueror. So
well, also, if nothing else, this may make it so that they can keep using Tom Hiddleston in the movies, even though they killed him.
Yep, exactly.
They killed him, but remember, it's a comic book. Nobody is dead.
And it's an interesting twist that he knows he's dead and he knows how he died.
Yeah.
You know, so and he's the variant. So what happens when things get fixed and go back? Like he can't go back.
Yeah. So where's this where's the third Loki come from? Is that the future of this Loki? Or is it
Here's the question. Did they capture this Loki because the other Loki is the one who's causing the problems, and they could only get to that Loki if this Loki can fix it? So Loki, there you go.
See?
Multiple Loki.
Like I said, now we're having Doctor Who conversations.
Exactly. Now we're getting into the confusion.
End of going cross-eyed?
Yeah, there you go.
Dude, that's what the fun thing about doing time travel stories in general is, because there's rules, but there is no rules. You do whatever you want.
The rules are what you make them in your universe.
Exactly.
Like, they're never the same across various properties and universes, so.
And you can break every one of those rules because you created them yourself.
Exactly. You can come up with an explanation for why you can break it and things don't all fall apart.
Exactly. So, you guys got anything else about Loki for this week before? Now, we're not going to, just like the rest of the Marvel shows, we're not going to be touching this every week. Or we're trying not to touch on it every week. But when we get to the end of it, we'll talk about the whole thing.
Yes, absolutely. It's just, I think with every Marvel show, we've talked about the premiere just to give our impressions and what we think is, you know, is going to come of it. So
exactly.
If there's big reveals, if there's like a big cameo or something, we might mention it. But otherwise,
yeah, when Chris Evans shows up as Captain America again, then we're like, holy moly, check this out.
That's right.
So, but we do have an announcement for you guys, a little programming thing before we call this off for today, is next week we're going to take a break. Since at this point, everybody who knows we record on Sundays, and next Sunday is Father's Day. So we're going to take some time with family ourselves. But we will be back the week after that, and it will be just a week out from the 4th of July at that point.
Good Lord.
Yeah. We're almost halfway through the summer already.
Yeah, we thought things were moving slowly, and all of a sudden it's like, holy crap.
Yeah. Exactly. So and July actually has some big stuff coming for in the way of media and entertainment and things. The things that we have fun with. I mean,
yeah, and we're finally getting able to get back to the movies because they are coming out and the big ones are finally coming out. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing.
Black Widow's what, the first or second weekend in July?
July 9th.
9th. So that's only a couple of weeks away.
That's not far.
So anything else before we wrap this up today?
I don't think so.
Well, Geeksters, did you watch Sweet Tooth? Did you watch Loki? I know you all watched Loki. I mean, that's not even a question at this point. If you're listening to us, you probably watched Loki. Miss Dawn wants to know what you thought of these shows and what's your impressions. You can get a hold of us at www.geekwatch1.com. Anywhere, everywhere, all social media, we are GeekWatch1. If you put GeekWatch1 into a search bar and don't find us, let us know and Miss Dawn will take care of the problem.
I'll send a variant after it.
That's right. Also, you can email us, geekwatch1@gmail.com. We are proud members of the Tangent Bound Network at tangentboundnetwork.com and the Weebie Geeks Podcast Collective at weebiegeekspc.com. And other than that, remember to check out our buddy Charlie Murphy with Stray Dog in the Cafe 388 and the Akron Pickle for all of your sauces and pickle needs. And if you're in the local area, all your lunch needs. He makes some awesome food. Check them out. Look up Stray Dog Akron or Cafe 388 on all social media, or even Google him. You'll find Charlie Murphy. Let him know that GeekWatch One sent you. That's right. He loves it. So other than that, for Dawn and Vicky and myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.